Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Happy Wednesday, everyone. It's a little bit chilly out there still, although all the clouds have flew away to the east, unfortunately. Devin Henry here, slightly depressed coming in today. You know when a weather person is new to the valley, when they're up in front of the green screen and they go, tomorrow, very dark, very gloomy, wet, rainy, but don't worry, the clouds will leave soon. You know that they're new because everyone at home is like, woohoo, yeah, rain. And then they're like, oh, it's going to be a gloomy, terrible day. And it's like, don't worry, you'll figure it out here after a few months. Rain is a good thing here in Arizona, and I hope you all enjoyed the rain yesterday, although all the roads by my house now are completely torn up from the last couple things. Anyway, Devin Henry here for the Brad Sesmat Show. I am, in fact, not Brad Sesmat, but we will be having the boss man on the show today. We're going to talk about the bazillion Cardinals moves so far. Now the day is actually official that teams can actually be signing and talking to players, even though that's already happened legally at the very least. But we'll talk to Brad about all the Cardinals signings. Of course, U of A starts their tournament today for the Pac-12 basketball tournament. They take on USC. ASU will play tomorrow against the winner of UCLA and Stanford. Also, GCU plays tomorrow in the WAC. And plenty more coming up. We're also going to have Jordan Hamm. Where is Jordan? We will find out where Jordan is. All that coming up here on the show. Our rundown brought to you by SagiCorp. Now, SagiCorp, protect what matters most. Do that with life insurance, guys. Brad talks to so many people about this, and every single day on the show, be sure to give them a call. If you don't have everything figured out, which likely, you probably don't. If you don't, you want to connect the dots. You don't need to buy a policy or whatever you want to do right then. Talk it over. Figure it out. What do you need to do? What do you need to change? Go ahead and call our friends at SagiCorp now and figure that out. SagiCorp, we appreciate SagiCorp and their support. So, guys, we got plenty to talk about today. We have three of our basketball teams, Arizona, Arizona State, and Grand Canyon University, all ready to show off both tonight and tomorrow for the Pac-12 tournament. But before we get ready to go, we have Jordan Hamm on the phone. We're going to jump in with Jordan. And I wanted this to be a surprise today for me. I have no idea where the heck you are. Skype didn't feel like working today. So, Jordan, where are you?
I am at Salt River Fields, my home away from home this month, as Diamondbacks continue their spring training. So just taking it all in on a very windy Wednesday morning. So my apologies if the sound quality isn't the best here moving forward.
Yeah, no problem. Definitely windy out there today. And you just had a story out yesterday, Adam Jones, now already making an impact for the Arizona Diamondbacks, five-time All-Star, going to be coming and contributing to the D-backs, and you put out a great video yesterday that he is, in fact, not going to be staying with his Arizona Valley resident mom. Did you offer up your place for him to crash?
It sounds like he has a couple of kids and a wife. I don't know if my my two-bedroom apartment in Scottsdale would be enough space for all of us. That sounds like a kind of like a sitcom presence or premise.
I mean, that could be a brand new TV show here for Fox Sports Arizona alongside Brad Sesmat Football AZ, I think. But I don't know. We could try a pilot, see if Adam will agree to that, and so on and so forth. But obviously, Adam Jones is the newest here to Arizona. The D-backs also made some cuts to the spring training roster very recently as well. What's your initial thoughts here? We're coming up on halfway through spring training already, man.
Yeah, and usually, you know, the past couple of years, what I've noticed is they kind of do a progression where it's, you know, five or six guys here that they move to the minor league roster, five or six guys there. Obviously, no surprises. In this case, they moved 14 guys to the minor league camp to various levels, and it makes sense. It's all of the top prospects, the guys that probably weren't going to start the year at the major league level, the Jazz Chisholms, the John Duplantiers, the Taylor Clarks of the group. Certainly plenty of potential major league talent down the road, but no one on that cut list really made too much of a big splash. And then just the presence of Adam Jones already coming in. Torre Lovello said from really, Adam was throwing the ball around and taking a quick BP, and he could already feel Jones's presence as a veteran leader. And one thing that Jones said yesterday was, There are already veterans on this team. This is a young team, but you have a Zach Greinke, you have a David Peralta, Steven Souza, who has been around the block a couple of times. So he's not looking to come in and be a savior of any type or anything like that, but he just wants to help some of these young guys along the way, and he still feels like he has plenty left in the tank at 33 years old, and I tend to believe him.
Now, you had a phenomenal Diamond in the Desert podcast a few weeks ago with John Ryan Murphy. I think we've already kind of talked about that, but I want to look at who John Ryan Murphy might be catching for. Obviously, you had that podcast. He was the last man to catch for Mariano Rivera. But give me a name, mm-hmm. a pitcher that right now I'm probably not thinking of, such as like a Zach Greinke, who we're going to be seeing in this pitching staff showing out more than I think people might expect.
You mean a pitching guy that's going to surprise some people?
Yeah, someone who I don't know of right now for a fact, but someone who's going to end up being potentially a guy out there who's going to be someone backing up Zach Greinke, whether it be starter the day after or in relief.
I think, and our former colleague Haley Stasiak's going to laugh about this because I was kind of a broken record last year with this, but TJ McFarland is a guy that he's battling some injury right now, but when he's healthy, he's such a versatile piece in that bullpen, and I think that the bullpen's actually going to be the strength of the team this year. They have a ton of guys that can really help shorten that game and bring a lot of versatility, but in TJ McFarland's spot in particular, he's a guy that has proven if it's in cleanup duty, if a guy gets injured or a guy gets knocked around early, he can throw four innings and save the bullpen for the following day, or he can come in a high leverage situation, get a couple of outs. And, 2 years ago, he had a very good first half. The second half of the season, he really struggled. And what we talked about at the beginning of last year was him just maintaining. And that was one thing that he really focused on. He did that last year. So he's becoming a very good middle relief type that can come in a lot of different situations and just flat out get outs. And obviously he's a lefty, so that helps against the left-handers, but he can also throw to the right-handers and be effective as well.
Now, before I let you go, I don't know if you've seen this video or not, but I got to get your reaction from the Arizona Diamondbacks Baby Shark video. I was impressed by Yoshi Hirano in that video.
Have I seen it? It's been on a loop for a week, Devin. Come on, man. Baby Shark is kind of polarizing. I am all for it. It is catchy as hell, and all you have to say is two words, and it's stuck in your head the rest of the day. I thought Yoshi was great. He kicked it off very nicely. Actually, TJ McFarland really committed to it. John Ryan Murphy was a guy that looked like he had stretched out before he did it, because there's a lot of range of motion. Robbie Wright, I'm all for it. I'm waiting for the first guy where it's going to be his walk-up song.
Yes,
who's it gonna
please.
Be where, because every year you get a handful of guys in the majors that have young kids, and they just say, well, what song do you want? And they they'll say Miley Cyrus or Justin Bieber, and it's funny, the big guy's walking up to Baby by Justin Bieber. But if that happens again, the odds on favorite is that it's gonna be Baby Shark.
And I mean, this song has been around forever. This isn't a new thing, Jordan, but here we are.
Right.
And I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, like you mentioned. I think that'd be hysterical.
And it sounds like and the other thing about that video, you can tell who the guys with young kids are,
mm-hmm.
because they're the ones that know all the moves. It's natural. And then you get some guys that are like, I don't know what the heck this thing is, but I'm going to do this dance move not well. But you can see, Taiwan Walker is a guy who has a young kid, and even he kind of had the very subtle move, but, he definitely knew what he was doing when he was on that camera.
I mean, I was kind of surprised. They all looked genuinely, not annoyed, because that some of these guys with some of the media stuff, they're just they want to get through it, get over, get back on
sure.
the field. Like, they all looked genuinely, they weren't disappointed to be there. Not all of them were genuinely happy, but it was they were all satisfied, at least, I think.
Yeah, there was a group that truly committed, but everybody seemed on board to at least participate. Now, that being said, we didn't see the cutting room floor footage. It could be a couple of guys that halfway through said, screw this, and walked out. I thought it was a pretty funny video, and they got on that trend early, because I have a feeling a couple of teams could have definitely done that, but kudos to the Diamondbacks for jumping on that move, much like they did the Adam Jones signing.
Yes.
Circling it all back. Full circle.
Let's call it team building. Team building with Baby Shark
exactly.
in spring training. Jordan, thank you a
and
bunch, man. Yeah, what?
Oh, just one final thought. I loved the comments in Twitter where people are like, oh, glad they're really focusing on a championship. Guys, come on. This is a long spring training, a long season. The workouts go till noon most days. You got to pass the time somehow. So
it is March 13th.
Let's get off our high horses. Yeah. Okay, Mr. Serious Twitter Egg. We get it.
March 13th. The World Series, guys. Only 7 months away. Let's crack down here. Jordan, thank you, man. Be sure to be checking out sports360az.com for Jordan's content coming on up, including the Adam Jones piece and also his reaction to someone asking him about his mother's house and residence here in Arizona. Thanks again, Jordan.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Appreciate you as always. And we'll also catch up. We have Brad Sesmat jumping around as well, the big boss man himself. So we're going to have plenty of voices coming from different places here today on the Brad Sesmat Show. And once again, I'm not, in fact, Brad Sesmat. I'm, in fact, Devin Henry. That was, in fact, Jordan Hamm. And coming up after this break, we are, in fact, going to be talking about hoops. Not just the Phoenix Suns, but not just Arizona State. Also U of A and also the GCU Lopes as their conference tournaments heat up here coming up today. And also tomorrow. You're watching the Brad Sesmat Show on Sports 360 AZ. I'm Devin Henry. Welcome everyone back to the Brad Sesmat Show here on Sports360AZ.com. Twitter. At DevinHenry77. At Brad Sesmat. You're going to be wanting to check out those. And also, of course, another one that you're going to want to follow if you are into college basketball. At ErikSports360AZ. Those are the accounts that you want to follow today if you want to get everything going on in Arizona State, U of A, and GCU basketball going on in Las Vegas. Starting today, we'll see if U of A will continue to go on over to tomorrow, but that's what I want to focus on right here. Because today is the day. Do we figure out if an Arizona team will make March Madness this year? There's a case that ASU doesn't. U of A, I mean, unless they win the Pac-12 tournament as a 9 seed, I don't foresee them getting some sort of bid. GCU, unless they win the WAC, I mean, only one team is going to be coming out of that conference more than likely. And last year, it looked like they had a chance, and it all kind of fell apart. Let's start at Arizona State, because they have now won 5 of their last 6. That includes Utah, Stanford, Cal, Oregon State, and Arizona, with a funky loss to Oregon, a team that they beat a lot earlier in the year. This is a team who just doesn't quite have an identity yet. And when you look back to last year, that's where I think a lot of people were starting to figure out, when you beat Kansas, was it a fluke? Because Kansas lost a lot of games that year. Maybe so, but Kansas is still a great basketball team. And then this is an Arizona State squad that ended up being in the Final Four and would lose to Syracuse. Syracuse also being number one this year, fun fact. No, but the question is, does Arizona State continue to grow? They're hot right now, 1-5-6. But the biggest problem that I foresee is last year you went, okay, this team beat Kansas. They had good wins. They made it to the NCAA tournament, whether it be the last 4 or whatever, the last 8, whatever the heck it's called nowadays. I don't remember anymore. But nonetheless, that was a team who I said going into next year, this is where they figure it all out. This is where, okay, maybe they're not a top team in the NCAA tournament, but dang it, they're a 7 seed maybe. They're in it at least. Now we're questioning that again. And the first thought in my mind was, you know what, maybe they don't make the Pac-12 tournament this year, but they did beat Kansas again, and they had a good win on the schedule. They swept U of A this year. Now that will propel them to a good season back in 2019-2020 next year. Then I remember that's exactly what I said last year, and here we are. You beat Kansas, and then you go home and lose to Princeton. There are plenty of bad losses on this schedule. And when I kind of stepped away for a minute, I kind of wasn't paying a ton of attention, especially after the Oregon loss. Of course, I was paying attention to the ASU-U of A game. But then when they locked in the number 2 spot, I went, wait a second. That's not where I figured ASU would be in this Pac-12 tournament, at the 2 spot. You look down this line, man. They were only 1 game in front of Utah and 2 games in front of Oregon State, Colorado, and Oregon. So they were the 2, and they could have ended up being the 6 or the 7 ending up instead of being the 2 if they would have lost 2 games. I mean, hold your head as high if you're an ASU fan, because you finished the year with single-digit losses, a 21-9 regular season for Arizona State, regardless of if in Pac-12 play they end up being 12-6. I mean, that's not where you want to be when you're a team who goes out and beats Kansas, and you should be competing for an NCAA tournament spot on the higher level. And when you beat a number 1 team, I feel like the expectation is that you should be able to go into the Sweet 16. Then there's a point that ASU, if they lose in this first round for them, the second round since they get the bye. If they lose to UCLA or Stanford in this quarterfinal matchup in the Pac-12 tournament, do they even make the tournament? Remy Martin, in my mind, even as a sophomore, should be the leader of this squad because I'm of the old school thinking that the guards run the offense. Whether it's the point guard or the shooting guard, you have the ability as the one or the two to run the offense, and that just hasn't quite been the case this year. Figuring out their identity to, I don't know, beat teams that they should beat. I mean, that's where this all comes down to. I think Arizona State plays down to their opponents, but they still play great against teams like Kansas. When they played Kansas, there was still a little bit of uncertainty on the floor, a little bit of craziness, a little bit of, I'm not entirely sure what's going on here. Dort, here's a lob. Boom, we just scored a point. Can't complain at that point, right? So, does Arizona State beat UCLA or Stanford? More than likely. And then they take on, they would potentially take on Utah or a team who they just lost to, Oregon, or Washington State, another team who ASU, even as an 11 seed, hasn't had the best of luck against as of late. But do they end up losing the semifinals? As a 2 seed, you are expected to be the top 2, and you are expected to be in the championship game. Am I right? So, I don't know. This is a question mark. I think all three teams in Arizona, it's a big question mark right now. When you look at University of Arizona, they're the number 9 seed. Once again, as I mentioned, like with Arizona State, one or two losses in the season is the difference between a 4 seed and now a 9 seed. Wildcats, they have Brandon Williams back. Chase Jeter, healthy. Those are obviously fantastic pieces to have back on your team after going on a wild slide. You lose against Arizona State, you're literally fourth from the bottom, but nonetheless, when you look at this, when you look at 4 through 10, they're separated by 3 games. That's how tight the Pac-12 is in this cannibalistic Pac-12, where every team is almost 500 besides 1, 2, 3, and then your bottom 2, essentially. So, I mean, there's just such a big question mark in this Pac-12 tournament. I'm really interested to watch it from the highlight reels because I don't have Pac-12 Network, nor am I going to go to a, you know, someone who does and lose a bunch of other channels. But nonetheless, at least ESPN will have the semifinal game if ASU is in it, and then the championship game is also on ESPN. Moving real quick to check out Grand Canyon. It's weird. It is so weird because this is a team who last year almost won the WAC championship tournament. They were almost an automatic bid into the state tournament. I'm going high school. Into the national NCAA tournament. And then they lose the final 2 games here in WAC play. They started WAC play 7-0. They finished 3-6. I mean, that's got to be confusing for Coach Dan Marley because you started on such a high. And the expectation is to go out and be in that WAC championship game after being beat in probably almost last season. I mean, at the very least, it's fun. Jake Toulson, player of the year, ex-Highland High School basketball player, so that's a ton of fun. Michael Finke, first team, all WAC. That's phenomenal. But when you look at the first round game, will be against Seattle, the team who they just lost to in overtime. But you go all the way back to the very first meeting, all the way back on January 5th, that was an easy win, it almost looks like, before a 14-point gap there at GCU. Now you're in neutral territory. You just lost at Seattle in overtime by 7 points. So what is the future of this team? I want to talk to Brad Sesmak coming up next year a little bit more about that because Brad is a little bit more keyed in, I think, on this than I am when it comes to Grand Canyon because where is this team going? Because last year, it's kind of like with Arizona State with how well they played last season in non-conference play. I looked at it and said, next year, that's the year that they can blow the doors open, and then doesn't happen. So now you're in conference tournament play. Are you going to go to the NCAA tournament or not? We don't know. But I need to give a shout-out on the point of GCU. Softball beat Florida State. They beat the number 1 Florida State in softball. So I got to throw that out there. I think that's a ton of fun. And then one final thing. One more tournament that I want to focus on, guys. We are going to Montana. Why the heck would we go to Montana? NAIA Women's Basketball Tournament. I know what you're thinking. Devin, you're a lunatic. And you are correct. But this isn't why. No, Arizona Christian University Women's Basketball, for the second straight year, will be heading to the NAIA National Tournament. They are the 6th seed taking on Oklahoma City. Now, I've actually been following Arizona Christian University women's basketball probably more than I've been following the University of Arizona over the past 4 years, because I was fortunate to do a lot of work with Arizona Christian. The first year that I covered Arizona Christian basketball, they had single-digit wins and over 20 losses in their season. The head coach, Odell Berry, just moved 2 years before that from Liberty High School. And he had two former Liberty players as freshmen, being in Courtney Christmas and Michaela Enders, and then another freshman from Valley Vista Southwest School in Jada Willingham. They were obviously going to be pretty good stars. They were behind the first ever All-American in Madison Austin that ever played at Arizona Christian University. You watch them their sophomore year, they got better. You watched them last year almost upset a ton of teams in what is the most difficult conference, in my opinion, in NAIA women's hoops and even the men's hoops for that matter, the Golden State Athletic Conference. Last year, they made their first bid to the national tournament in program history behind those three juniors, Courtney Christmas, Jada Willingham, and Michaela Enders. And all three of them, when you look at no matter what level of college, when you are a high school athlete, a star high school athlete, when you move to college, you typically don't advance your numbers. You typically aren't scoring more points per game, assisting more per game. All three of those players have had larger stat numbers their junior year of college than their senior year of high school, which in my mind is just out of this world because that doesn't just happen. All three of them have made themselves better. I talked to them, and I think altogether their favorite moment was going to Nationals last year. And now they're back this year, their senior year. They almost took down one of the best teams as a lower seed last year, and they had them settle for about three-quarters of the game and lost in the fourth quarter. They're a six-seed playing a three-seed in Oklahoma City. I would not be surprised in the slightest if Arizona Christian University women's basketball is in the second round of the NAIA National Tournament when we see them on Friday. That's a story that I'm going to be following. Also, check it out on Sports 360 AZ. There might be something coming up as well. Before I give a call to the big boss man, Brad Sesmat, and I'm going to ask him, guys, why does he put you through this torture of having me up here? We're going to talk NASCAR here in like 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Why does he put you through this torture? We'll find out after the break. But first, I do want to talk about the Phoenix Suns, because I was hard on them. I wouldn't say disrespectful. I was telling the truth. Because the Phoenix Suns are a team who are the second worst team in the NBA. If they win out the rest of the year, because they're 5 of their last 7 are wins, if they win out the rest of the year, they will still end the year 30-52, which will be no better than 13th in the West if they end the year winning out. Nonetheless, though, they won 5 of 7. That includes Los Angeles. That includes Milwaukee. That includes Golden State just this week in a phenomenal game. So I trashed on them and the potential future of this team last week. I felt bad about it. I really did because I want to see this team do well. And once they start doing well, I got to go out and slap him in the face from, you know, this nobody sitting here at this desk on Sports 360 AZ. But the Phoenix Suns, I think that we all know that they have the ability to win next year. Heck, this year. But the biggest question and the reason why it was so hard for that multi-million-dollar stadium renovation, or hundreds of million dollars, I should say, stadium renovation to pass, is because the lack of confidence in the front office at every single form. If I take this conversation just to the court, Kelly Oubre has been a great addition. Tyler Johnson is going to be a huge pay potential policy insult to the Phoenix Suns, but he's been playing well at the one. Devin Booker is a future star in this league, and DeAndre Ayton has grown potentially well. You look at the draft, at the end of the day, you're going to have a top three pick probably, and still in my mind, that's embarrassing. Yeah, you have the potential of getting Zion Williamson. But it's still embarrassing in my mind to hold that pick, not based off of a trade, but because you deserved it. And that's embarrassing in my mind, even for the Arizona Cardinals, who, in my opinion, are going to have a very high ceiling next year. But the future looks bright on the court. Off the court, I don't know or not, but I mentioned last week how you look at the bench and this team looks defeated. I haven't seen that these last three games. I haven't seen the defeat. I see confidence. I see victory. I see teamwork. I see laughing on the bench. That's something that I haven't seen these past 68 games. That includes their 16-16 wins. So on the court, it's looking up. It's looking better. This team is growing. The youngsters are developing. And that was my biggest concern with the Philadelphia 76ers. Trust the process. Is you have all these youngsters in here who have a winning mentality from high school and college. They don't know how to lose. And when they do lose, they take it badly because they've never been in that position before. No veteran leadership to tell this team how to play. So you bring in guys like Tyson Chandler, but a veteran leader on the bench who doesn't play doesn't show anything. That just shows the team, yeah, you can say all you want, but I'm still better than you because I'm actually having minutes on the floor. Does that change in the future? I don't know, but the 76ers did bring in some veteran leadership, and that did eventually help them out and make them the powerhouse that they are in the East. Does that happen in the West here? Coach Igor, and I'm not going to say his last name right now because I don't have it directly in front of me, but nonetheless, I think that he's done a good job in the position that he's in. Heck, I think Earl Watson did a good job in the position that he was in, but I think that the Phoenix Suns, this almost feels weird off the tongue, has a bright future. And when I say that, I'm purely saying on the court. We'll see what the front office looks like. We'll see if Robert Sarver, after the scare of almost not even getting a stadium renovation, will put him into high gear to actually put more investment into this team. And I'm not even talking monetary, guys. So the future seems bright. 5 out of 7 wins. Will I say the same thing next week? There's that question mark again, just like ASU, U of A, and GCU. Hoops are a giant game of Monopoly in Arizona right now. We'll take another break here. Brad Setsmatch showing up here on the other side. Devin Henry here on the Brad Setsmatch Show on Sports 360 AZ. Welcome back, everyone, to the Brad Setsmatch Show here on Sports360AZ.com. And like I mentioned earlier, I'm not Brad Setsmatch, I'm Devin Henry, but I do have the actual Brad Setsmatch on the phone. That's right, the big man, the boss man himself. Brad, you take Wednesdays off. You force these poor people to stare at me for an hour. So why the heck are you putting these people through this torture today?
Listen to you. Well, first of all, it's good to have good to hear your voice. And I wish I were taking Wednesdays off. I'm out doing stories and stuff.
Off from the camera. Because you, Jordan, Eric, you're all going wild out on Wednesdays typically.
Right.
Out and about.
No, it's fun. It's fun. I think this today it's a really interesting day in sports because the Cardinals, Devin, get Brett Hundley. He's a high school legend over at Chandler High School. Did a great job. I mentored Brett for a couple of years on how to deal with media and all that stuff back in the TV days over at Channel 3. And then he went to UCLA and he did well there, went to Green Bay, was in a tough spot behind Aaron Rodgers. Tom Clements, the quarterback coach at the time at Green Bay, is now with the Cardinals. I think there's a connection there. He goes up to Seattle. He doesn't play. He sits there behind Russell Wilson. So I think he's a clean body, which in the NFL at 26 years of age is rare. He's sat and watched very good quarterbacks to learn from. And he's got a mentor on the coaching staff here in Arizona. The ironic part is, obviously, Josh Rosen and Brett Hundley were together at UCLA. Brett, his final year, his junior year, Josh was a backup to Brett, and Josh took over, so the two know each other very well. And then the whole thing about him coming home, I think just the last 48 hours of Terrell Suggs, a former Chandler Hamilton High star on the football field, him coming back after 16 seasons in Baltimore to finish out his career with the Cardinals, and Brett Hundley, I would like to get both Terrell and Brett together to see who's got a wager when Chandler does play against Hamilton. I'm sure there'll be something in the locker room, and I'm sure that when UCLA plays Arizona State, there'll be something in the locker room, not just with Brett, but probably with Josh Rosen, assuming he's still here, and with Brett Hundley and Terrell Suggs. So the last 48 hours, if you're a fan of sport here in Arizona for longer than a nanosecond, and you know this, Devin, a lot of people come to Phoenix, they're here a few years, and then they leave and move on. But those of us that have been here a while, to see high school legends that were college legends, Brett Hundley is viewed as the second best quarterback to come out of UCLA since outside of Troy Aikman. Terrell Suggs is viewed as the best defensive player by a lot of people's estimation to ever come out of Arizona State. I'm sure there's a healthy debate there that can be had by people. So when you have two guys like that roll in here, there's going to be buzz around the Cardinals. Now, can they play? You know, that's my first metric. Can you play? Can you still play the game? In Terrell Suggs' case, looks like you can still get after the pass rusher, or after the quarterback and be the pass rusher. It looks like you put him alongside of Chandler Jones that they're going to be productive. It looks like his body is still holding up. Brett Hundley's case, he's more of the wild card. Something happens to Josh Rosen, or if they go take Kyler Murray, is there someone in place here? I think it's an upgrade over what they had last season at Mike Glennon. Mike Glennon was a typical drop-back, stand-around quarterback. Brett Hundley can move the pocket if the offensive line is banged up and beat up. I think it gives them an opportunity now with Brett Hundley if he has to be called on into action. So free agency, Devin, you know this, it's a time where you're paying money to make up for your mistakes. So when people get all excited about free agency, yeah, that's fine. It's something to get fans geeked up about in March. But what's happening here is the Cardinals are paying money for mistakes or guys that just didn't pan out. They'll never say we screwed up. That's not the MO of the NFL. You know, that's it should be, but it's not. And will they have production out of these two players and the others that they're signing? I think they're up to 5 free agents that they signed so far. It's a big number. It's a big number. So,
and I want to step back on Brett Hundley because you posted on Twitter, and I quote, "One of my favorite people in this biz." You already mentioned that you were able to have a pretty good relationship with him before, you know, now he's in the NFL, of course. It'll be a strange role reversal between Rose in the backup at UCLA, and now he's probably the starter. And I don't know if you want to talk about Kyler Murphy. I know it's your favorite thing to talk about in the world, but why Brett Hundley? Why is he one of your favorite people in this biz? I want to dig in on that.
That's kind of good. That's a good question. You come across people, and I've been doing this for 30 plus years, but I'm still young at heart and actually young in age. And a guy like Brett, when I saw him at Chandler High School, this is when Chandler was getting drilled by Hamilton every year. And I had Brett on a high school show on Channel 3. He had just thrown a game-winning touchdown against Centennial. We had him on, and he was jumping around, and he just was so excited. You couldn't understand anything that he was saying. And the next day I saw talked to his dad, and his dad said, "It was so great you had Brett on the show. How did you think you did?" I said, "He was terrible. He was so into the moment that if he's going to blow up and be a professional player," and you know, Devin, you can go to the sideline and say, "That guy's probably going to play at the next level." And Brett was one of those guys. So I met him at Chandler High School in the locker room. We took the interview that we had done, and I said, "No, let's break this down a little bit." And I'd done the same thing with Marshall Faulk way back in the day. I mentored Marshall. Marshall was my intern. Hall of Fame running back now in the National Football League, retired. But you got to take time with athletes at a high level and teach them media. And I know that sounds over the top for some people. They just want to see about yards and carries, but I get more invested in the person when I see that they're really serious in all facets on and off the field. Brett and I would text each other about his interview stuff when he was at UCLA, when he was at Green Bay. And I've just seen a side of him that you don't see that often. If Brett Hundley throws 5 interceptions, I'm going to say he was terrible yesterday. That's the other thing in our industry nowadays. It's a little bit of a rant, but yeah, you can have a personal relationship with somebody. But if they don't play well at their profession, you have to point it out. You cannot just sit there and stand behind the, "Well, he's my friend." They get it. The great ones understand. The ones that have very thin skin don't get it. And I've had coaches that won't talk to me for months at a time because I'll point out that, yeah, they've lost 10 in a row and the players have quit on the coach. And then they'll come back around and say, "You were so negative." No, I was telling you what was going on in the locker room. What your players are telling me. I think in Brett's case, he was a NCAA student leader on campus at UCLA. So he had a lot more going on than just playing football. He was interested in the process of being a Division I athlete and representation of Division I athletes. Division I athletes are pieces of meat. People say, "Well, they get a scholarship, they get this, they get that." They don't get much. And he was one that was an advocate for their rights as players. I think as his career winds down, whenever that may be, I could easily see Brett being involved in the players' union or being involved in the legal side he's got a lot more interest than just blocking and tackling, which I like. And that's why we just stayed close. You know, I've had lunch with him about a year and a half ago just to sit and visit about a whole bunch of nothing. And I think it's great that he's able to come back here. He didn't give me a heads up or anything. It's fine. There's a professional relationship there. But can he play? I think he can play. I think this is a good situation for him. Good question.
Now, probably going to be a backup, but I think he'll be a great story moving forward on the season, especially with his relationship with Josh Rosen, assuming that Josh Rosen is on the Cardinals in a few months, whatever, so on and so forth. Before I let you go, you're heading to Vegas for all the tournaments going on, and I want to talk about the Lopes, the GCU Antelopes, because that's the ones that don't really have the spotlight on because they're in the WAC. But
right.
When you look back last year, they almost won the tournament. They almost had a bid into the NCAA March Madness tournament, which everyone was kind of surprised by. And I looked at that and said, moving forward, you know, this might be a program that has a chance to win it again next year. And then you look at the start of this WAC season for them, 7-0 to start off, and then 3-6 to end it. Now they're kind of on a slide. It doesn't look like they're even going to do much in the WAC. What's the trajectory of this team right now, do you think, Brad, with Dan Marley at the helm after a season where you went, maybe this is a competitive team moving forward that could be one of those lower bids in the tournament?
Well, Devin, I think of the three teams that are up there in Vegas, and Eric and I are heading up tomorrow morning. ASU plays tomorrow night. I don't see the need to be up there today to watch U of A and USC in an 8-9 game. But I told Eric, we're going to do the double tomorrow night. And you know what that means. In our industry, at 6 p.m., ASU will play the winner of UCLA and Stanford. That game will end about 8:20. At 8:30, at the Orleans, about 5 miles away from T-Mobile Arena, GCU will play Seattle University. We're going to go to both games. I think Eric's probably going to bolt from the ASU game at halftime and get over there early. And then I'll head over there, and I'll get there probably around, I don't know, 8-minute timeout first half, and stay and write and shoot. So we'll see two teams tomorrow night. Of the three teams in state, look, ASU, I don't know, they're Jekyll and Hyde. U of A, Sean is just, he's going to lose his mind with somebody up there. He's going to get tired of talking about no comment, no comment, no comment about the test line. I think in Dan Marley's case, Brian Mueller, the president of the university, has had very lofty goals and lofty expectations, as he should. And GCU has not accomplished those lofty goals and lofty expectations of getting through the WAC tournament and getting to the NCAAs. Last night in the West Coast Conference, St. Mary's beat Gonzaga. The West Coast Conference is going to get two teams in. They are. In the WAC, that's not happening. It's going to be the winner of the championship of the conference tournament. And it's usually New Mexico State. How patient is the president at GCU going to be if there's a first-round elimination? Let's say they lose tomorrow night to Seattle University. I just know that the expectations at GCU are at a very, very high level set by the president. And if they don't advance through the tournament, at least to the championship, I think it's going to be viewed as a failure. How is Dan Marley going to handle that? Dan's been on the job a number of years now over at GCU. He has some very good players. Labor's a good player. Finke's made the all-conference team. Carlos Johnson. But at the end of the day, when the president has expectations of March Madness eventually happening, and if it doesn't happen, is it just this was a season of transition? Well, how far is that going to go? So I'm interested to see where GCU goes here in the tournament. I had higher goals and expectations for them at the start of the year. I felt like they're going to play in the conference title game, and this year they're going to push through the top. The way they played, you pointed it out, they have been good consistently. I mean, they just haven't. Let's not sugarcoat it. And anybody who's a fan of GCU basketball is going to tell me, oh, you're being too harsh on them. No, look at the scoreboard. So the numbers don't lie. It's not the referee's fault. So that's the three of the three teams. Each one of them has a compelling storyline. U of A loses today, Sean's going to feel so much heat, and with all the Sean Miller and all the legal stuff swirling around them, Bobby Hurley, I think, is in a space where they may be peaking at the right time, but that team, you don't know. And then over at GCU, you've got to do more than just get through one game. You've got to get back to the finals and try to punch your ticket and get to March Madness. I just don't see it any other way. So really looking forward to Vegas. Excited to go to Vegas. Some years we go to Vegas, we know there's U of A is really good, and the other two teams, This year, all three teams have something compelling that I think fans of all walks down here on the basketball front are going to want to pay attention to.
As you mentioned, GCU taking on Seattle. They just came off a loss to Seattle to end their season in overtime. Yeah, we're going to have to wait and see how that one goes, but we have headlines on all three of those guys on the website, sports360az.com. And, of course, like Brad has mentioned, we'll have plenty of content coming up on the website this weekend as well. Brad, thanks for joining me. You're busy. Get out of here. Go do your thing.
See you, Devin. Thanks.
That's Brad Sesmat, my boss. Oh, yeah, he also is CEO here at sports360az.com. Be sure to be checking out the website, sports360az.com, for all of our content, whether it be pro hoops or, as we mentioned this weekend coming up, is the college hoops segment. Coming up next, I'm talking NASCAR. You know what it means when I'm here on a Wednesday. I'm sorry. Nah, not really. I'm just kidding. I'm not that sorry. NASCAR coming up on the other side after the Ticket Guardian 500 weekend this past weekend. I'm Devin Henry here on Sports360AZ. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show here on Sports360AZ. Devin Henry along for the ride with you. And be sure to check out sports360az.com for all of our content that we got going on here. So much this weekend with all the tournaments going on right now in Vegas, not to mention all the Cardinals moves, the D-backs moves, Jordan, Eric, Brad, myself, Andrew. I mean, everyone, it's all hands on deck right now in this weird kind of, you know, there's not really a ton of sports going on right now besides hockey and basketball. And there's not a ton going on with those right now. But nonetheless, we're figuring it all out. We got lots of content going on the website for you, including this past weekend I was out at ISM Raceway for the Ticket Guardian 500. Phenomenal race. I got all the content up for you guys to watch. A recap of every single day, including written stuff and video stuff. It's probably the best race of the year so far. Four races in with, you know, cars going five wide into turns number one and turns number three and four going down the back straight. So some phenomenal visuals. It was a phenomenal race, and the facility's just second to none. $178 million went into it, and you can kind of tell on that. But be sure to be following me at DevinHenry77, Devin with an O, Henry with a Y, at Brad Sesmat for the big man himself. Be sure to keep it here at sports360az.com for everything that you need to know. Devin Henry here. Candy Wilkerson is our chairwoman of the board, just across in the window from me. But nonetheless, guys, Brad is back tomorrow. I think Eric's back too, so my face will be gone. You're welcome. One more thanks for Sagicor for supporting us and what we do here at Sports360AZ, and also Brad and Jordan for calling on in here on the Brad Sesmat Show. We'll see you tomorrow here, same time, same place.